water plant. We are making really great progress with the water plant. It's been a little frustrating. Hopefully you all subscribe to the city news and have been getting the weekly updates on the process and the progress. The engineering firm that's doing the programming of the PLCs and the SCADA worked out the conflict Friday and monitored the system all weekend, and we didn't have any hitches. Today we didn't have any issues or complaints that were received at City Hall, and we think that we've cleared another hurdle. We still, of course, have the aeration issue, and we have the contractor and the engineer doing specs, and the contractor is going to give us three bids, one for a baffle, one for inlet piping, and one for outlet piping. We have about $60,000 remaining in the grant funds, and if the funds are available to do all three of those, then we will. If not, we'll do the inlet and the baffle, and if not, we'll do the baffle. That will resolve the aeration of the water, which is more of a nuisance than a problem, but we do want to clear that up as soon as we can. I'm not aware of any other things that are hanging out there that we're not addressing or haven't addressed or are working on as far as valves, automatic valves and controls. And after several weeks of working one into the other, it's nice to not have one staring at us. That's not to say something might not pop up, because it's a new system. If you read today's news brief, I likened it to remodeling. It would be a lot better to build all new, but when we're integrating new stuff with the existing stuff, you're going to have some anticipated issues and you're going to have some surprises, and we're just working our way through that. Any questions?
The SCADA system, how is that integration completed, where we have the control over the sign from a distance, or is that something that's still not completed yet?
No, the sign integration is a different contract, and we it's a little bit like adjusting a carburetor. You know, you turn one screw at a time, you don't turn two or three. The sign will be on the same backbone communication as the plants, mm-hmm. and until the plants are settled down, I'm reticent to have the sign company start to work on the same communication bus that we're doing plants with, so that we know who is impacting what.
Very well.
So we're really close. It's on my list to get them queued up now. We got just a couple days under our belt, so we have a couple more days under our belt, and we'll be ready to put the sign on.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for David at this time? Not appearing, we'll move on to 7.2, Police Chief Troy Harrison, monthly departmental report. Chief.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. I know you have my report. It's kind of reminiscent of what you've seen the last several months. There's no highlights to it necessarily. If you have no questions on that, I do have a couple of things just to Randy French's plaque is out. I know that's been a big deal. I'm not going to be rude to take it out now and interrupt the meeting, but after the meeting, anybody that would like to take a look at it before we hang it up over there, you're more than welcome to come see me. I think it turned out pretty nice, and we finally got Randy in for a picture that was decent, so I was thankful for that. Another bit of good news, we received a check this month from Harris County District Attorney's Office that stemmed from forfeited drug asset forfeiture funds from a traffic stop that Officer Thompson made back towards the end of last year, right on 146. We confiscated some drugs from a vehicle, and we was able to tie several thousand dollars that was located in the car tied to the drug trade. So I made a phone call to the DA's office to see where we were in that, and just luckily enough, she said, come pick it up. So I think it's probably going to be monies to be used for something we need in the future, and that'll be a good thing. Also, Officer Hoffey started, you met him last month, but he started, and because of his 29 years experience at Houston, he was able to be trained very quickly and move into the rotation. I'm very thankful for that, because he's, for the last week, has been on his own. And since I've been here, that's the quickest we put anybody out on the street. He's very knowledgeable, get them on our eight streets or whatever it is and move on. But most of you have met him. I'm getting good compliments from the citizens. He drives around, talks a lot, which we like in this city. So I think there's good things coming out of the police department right now.
Very good. And just for clarification, the funds from the forfeiture or seizure of those assets, those funds are dedicated specifically to law enforcement expenses. Is that correct?
They will be, and I had great plans for them, except now we realize we're a few radios short, so I imagine we'll be buying a radio with it.
Very well. Are there any other questions for Chief at this time from citizens? Not appearing. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
At this point in time, if there are no other questions from council or concerns for Chief, you can be dismissed if you would like to leave. Or you're more than welcome to hang out. Thank you, Chief. Next item on the agenda, 7.3, Active Public Works Director Eric Ingram, monthly departmental report. Eric, thank you for coming this evening.
Good evening, Council. Mr. Stahl. Public Works purchased 5,042,000 gallons of water in March, as opposed to the 4 million in February. Public Works employees installed 3 new water taps for service on Miramar, the new development Mr. Sullivan is doing. And Public Works employees also repaired 3 mainline water breaks. At this time, there's no other special projects to report on.
Are there any questions for council?
I have a question for Mr. Ingram. As far as the funness we've had with hyper-aeration of water and all of that, since we do have a new system, have you implemented anything as far as a little bit more monitoring by the people working under you to kind of read those tanks a little further to make sure that our balance is at a 60-40 where it should be rather than going to a 40-60?
Well, I'm not, with the crews that we have now, I would like to take care of that myself personally as far as any adjustments go to it. But yeah, I'm also doing utilities still, so I'll check them once a morning and before we had a discussion, and now I do it twice a day. And plus, with this new SCADA system, I can monitor it all day long. I mean, it's sitting right here, so.
All right.
But yeah, as far as aeration goes, we've pretty much found a solution for it. We're keeping our fingers crossed.
All right. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from council at this time?
I noticed, Mr. Herman, we haven't started mowing ditches again.
Correct.
What's that
all about? Well, it's more or less a weather issue. I mean, it's definitely top of our agenda now. It's that time of the year. There's places out there, South Country Club, West Forest. I mean, we're aware of it.
Okay.
As soon as we can get, as soon as it dries up, it rains, but that's definitely top of our agenda.
Right. If I could throw one other thing in there. Ray Dodd is kind of our chief ditch mower, and I'd like to point out that he has been taking his groundwater classes and testing to get his certification, and that's a real positive thing for us to have him have a little more level of training in the utilities. And so he's had other demands on his time as well, and we are short-handed, as you know, and working to fill positions.
You had made mention that there were that the ditches had been inspected or at least reviewed. At some point in time, you've made an indication that you know there's a problem out there.
Oh, yeah.
But yet on the report, I see miles of ditch inspected as zero. For future, if there are inspections being done, one would hope that the information is accurately reflected on the monthly activity report. As council would look at this, it would appear as if there's been no work done. And if, in fact, it has been worked on, then we want to make sure that we have a solid accountability at that time.
Yes, sir.
Are there any other questions at this time?
I just want to make a comment. I just want to tell you guys to say thank you for everything. Because, you know, one thing I do notice in the mornings, I leave early to work, I sort of cruise through the city a little bit just to check. I always see Dodd or the other gentleman, I forgot his name.
Mr. Ruiz.
Yes, always out in the truck, picking up trash on the side of the street and the road and everything. Something out, look somewhere down the road. I definitely, maybe in this coming up budget with the new vehicles, maybe getting y'all some yellow hazard lights on top would be nice, besides just the hazards on the trucks. I hate to see somebody run the back of them, but the guys, I always see them out there, so just pass along. We appreciate that, because I like to see the fact you're trying to keep the city clean.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions at this time? From citizens?
Yes, sir. Stephen Jennings, 17 West Forest Avenue. Today's report, I think it came out today, may have been yesterday, maybe, on the water system. It said that it's milky, but it also said that it has a sour odor. And that's true. I'm just wondering why. But it said it's sour odor and milky and suddenly, but it's safe. Where's the odor coming from?
Well, I'm just going to say it's more of a visual thing, but what it is, it's like carbonated water coat. You know, there's a lot of oxygen in it. Fizzy the bubble, that's how you get the flavor out, basically. And your water, when it's extra aerated, that's what's going to happen.
My water doesn't smell like Coke.
Well, no, not like Coke.
It smells like Coke. I mean, it's really, it does smell.
Yeah.
You feel your bathtub, it's pretty bad.
It is the release of that air that's entrained in it. And that's where the odor's coming from.
Are we getting the air from Pasadena?
it's the air that is compressed into the hydro tank. What's happening is we're coming out of our brand new plant with three booster pumps, which we run typically one at a time, maybe two. Comes from an 8-inch pipe, then next into a 6-inch, which is what the hydro tank was originally plumbed with, which increases the velocity of the water, and it enters the bottom of the tank, and it jets itself into the top. And when it does, it goes through the surface of the water, hits the top, and it churns it like a big washing machine. And it takes the compressed air that's in there, that's just picked up at the plant and compressed into the tank, and mixes it into the water. And because it's under pressure, those bubbles get held in the water and pushed down the pipe, which is under pressure, until it gets to your house. And you get to smell what the inside of the hydro tank would smell like. It's sanitized, so it isn't a health issue, but it doesn't smell like what you're used to. I didn't use the word sour, but if that's how it, you know, smells to you, I fully understand that. It does have a funny odor, and that's where the odor is coming from. It's just that air in the tank getting compressed into it.
Are there any other questions at this time?
Right here.
Yes, sir.
Neil Moyer, North Country Club Drive. I'm curious whether, with our water purchases, is there any reconciliation with the amounts of water that we're charging for based on the meters? Do we have, how close is that? I mean, are we within some percent of being able to keep track of, because we're purchasing, that's in, we're selling to the residents, that's going out through the meters, and the question is, at least in my mind, is how close those figures correspond.
We reconcile that, and we track it monthly. We reconcile it annually, what the loss is. We have losses from breaks and from flushing and from hydrants. It's not metered. We're within an acceptable percentage. Those years when we had the drought and we had a lot of breaks, the number got much larger. We can get you specific numbers on that. We do track how much water we purchase, how much well water we pump into the system, and how much water we sell. There is an acceptable amount of loss in the system from primarily breaks and flushing in there, and we're within those tolerances. We need to bring up.
Are there any other questions to staff? If there are none here, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Mr. Ingram, thank you very much for showing up. There are no other items that council have for Mr. Ingram. I believe you can be excused for the remainder of the meeting. The next item on the agenda is business. 8.1, consideration and approval of invoices. If council has had an opportunity to review the invoices, I'll entertain a motion at this time.
I make a motion to approve 8.1, consideration and approval of invoices.
Thank you, Rick. Is there a second?
No, sir.
Thank you, Mike. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? With none appearing, the motion carries. Item 8.2, consideration and action to approve rescheduling. And I believe this may be a typo. It says the first regular city council meeting, but I believe that should say the second. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Very well. Rescheduling the second regular city council meeting from May, of May, from Memorial Day, Monday 26th, to Tuesday, May 27th. David?
Yes, we annually make that adjustment from Monday to Tuesday when Monday is a holiday.
where the city hall is closed. We don't do it for other holidays like Columbus Day, but Memorial Day we typically do that. So I put it on the agenda for council consideration.
Are there any questions from council or any comments from citizens at this time? Yes, sir.
Neil Boyer, North Country Club Drive. Unless I'm mistaken, and I frequently am, I think May 27th is an election day in Texas.
That is correct.
And so just make people aware that I guess this room, or maybe not, no, I guess not, because we don't hold the elections for the state offices. Mm-hmm. Just saying that that will be taking place the same day.
Sure. We'll certainly take that into consideration. Thank you for that input. Are there any other questions or concerns at this time? If not appearing, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion that we reschedule the first or the second regular council meeting from Memorial Day, Monday, May 26th, to Tuesday, May 27th, 2014.
Thank you, Nancy. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Bo. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? If not appearing, the motion carries. Next item on the agenda is 8.3, discussion of the effect of the Grim Waters 2014 GW-14 Homeowner Flood Insurance Affordability Act 2014, HFI AA14, Ashoreacres Homeowners. David?
Yeah, I just wanted to briefly touch on this. It's been a topic of discussion at prior council meetings. I know it's a lot of concern with our residents, as it should be. Anybody who lives in Texas and is in a flood zone. And I have excerpted some slides from one of a couple recent programs that I participated in. The new legislation is Grim Waters, after two congressmen, and it is the 2014, and it is not a replacement to the Bigger Waters Act of 2012, which was a reauthorization, but it is an amendment to primarily two sections of that legislation. The Bigger Waters 12 reauthorized the flood insurance program. That's part of what caused our issue, is that the flood insurance program was going to expire and they weren't going to be able to issue any flood insurance if it were not reauthorized. And so they were under the gun. They passed BW 12 in 2012. The intent was to make FEMA solvent with flood insurance. Hence, to make them solvent, to recover the losses, caused large increases in the insurance premium to go to the actuarial rate of where it actually would, you would pay a rate that would offset what your potential losses would be, as shown over time. That turned out to be a very onerous cost of insurance. There was a lot of pushback on that. And then we got the Grim Waters Act of 2012. It did retreat from the provisions that had some of the most significant impacts to homeowners. They titled this the Homeowners Flood Insurance Affordability Act of 2014. And that's actually a pretty good description of what the act does. So one of the things that it did was the original act was phasing out all the subsidized rates. And you may not even know you had a subsidized rate, but if you had purchased a house that was built before 1970s in Shore Acres, the insurance rate you were paying was subsidized, in that the theory was that that house was built before the federal government told you what elevation you had to build at, and rather than penalize you, they were going to subsidize your insurance rate even though you weren't at the level you should be. What the Bigger Waters Act did was said, over a period of 5 years, all of that's going to go away and you're going to pay whatever your rate should be for where you're at. They backed off of that a little. They left primary residences in, but they changed the way that's going to happen to stretch it out over a much greater period of time. So in principle, the phase-out still goes away, but it's not going to go away as soon as before, and it's not going to be in the same formula. As far as non-primary residents, that changed. That stayed, that did not change, it stays the same. So if you have a vacation house somewhere in a flood zone or a weekend place, then you will see the insurance rates on that continue to go up. Same is true of business properties. Same is true of repetitive loss properties. One of the things that's not shown here that changed is the definition of primary residence. In the Bigger Waters Act, they said a primary residence, you had to live there 80% of the year. In this, they had changed it to the primary residence is where you live 50% or more. So it's not as severe in determining which is your primary residence. In the Bigger Waters, all new policies were going to be issued at the full risk rate, which means you jump from your subsidized rate right up to what the actuarial rate is. Most of that went away with the Grim Waters. They took away the requirement that it immediately happen on the sale of property. They took away that immediately happening if you are substantially damaged or you make a substantial improvement. And they took that away for properties that were uninsured when the Bigger Waters Act passed. What they didn't take away is if you have an insurance lapse. So if you let your insurance lapse, when you go to get it renewed, you will have lost your grandfathered discounted rate. One of the other things that isn't really clear in what this says is that where they took away if you were uninsured when the Bigger Waters Act was passed, you do have to be insured when the Grim Waters passed. So you can't come in behind this and get the discounted rate. And then any property that refuses to mitigate, if the city has a requirement and you refuse to live up to the requirement, as the floodplain administrator, I can file a form with FEMA and you will go to the full risk rate for failure to comply with floodplain requirements. We don't have any of these other zones, so that is not applicable to us. The phase out of subsidized rates is pretty much what we just talked about. This is what the Bigger Waters Act did. It was 25%. Now that's been dropped, except for commercial buildings. It still will apply to all non-residential buildings. In determining a full risk rate, you need an elevation certificate. They got the 25% phase in. That was under the original Bigger Waters Act, and now that's been relaxed some. But you can see the premium difference between these two examples here and how it would tier up, and you would go from $2,900 to $9,000 in the fifth year on insurance for a non-compliant pre-firm slab on grade home. And you can see that's based on $200,000 insurance on the building and $80,000 on contents, and that is a rather steep insurance rate. So what happens here is they did away with the automatic full rate at sale. The subsidized rate now can be assigned to a new owner. So if you have insurance that's in force, you can now are in a much better position to sell your house because your rate will transfer to the next owner. So it does not take the jump. The new policy after date, that goes away. They have another date of 10-2012 for lapses. And they're going to restore the pre-firm rates. There are some people who already saw the increases from the Bigger Waters Act. And FEMA is going to roll those back. And if you were not going to be penalized under the new Affordability Act, you will get a refund of that payment of the insurance. So it's a retroactive refund for the difference in between. One of the new things that they've done is an offset, because they're still trying, and they're required by law to at least on paper make it pay for itself. And so one of the things that they've done is they've added a surcharge to everybody's flood insurance. So if it's your primary residence, there'll be $25 a year added to your insurance premium that will help pay the subsidy for you or anybody else that's in the system that's subsidized. If you're non-primary residential, they're adding $250 a year to everybody across the entire system. And that's where the makeup money is coming from. So it's really not good news if you're commercial property with flood insurance, because you are going to go to the actual rates over a period of 5 years, and you're going to pay $250 a year on top of that to subsidize primary residential properties getting discounted rate. Everything in the city of Shore Acres is in a special flood hazard area, and so we'll see that. There will be a phase-in for non-primary, non-residential, severe repetitive loss buildings at the same 25% as before. But they've now excluded those of you that are in a primary residence, so that's good. The full risk now will only, as we said previously, will only occur on a lapsed policy. So it's really important, if you have a subsidized rate, do not let your policy lapse. Make sure you keep that thing current, because you'll get dinged. The bad news about that is really bad, because if your mortgage company is not doing your flood insurance, if you do your flood insurance and you let it lapse, your mortgage company will go get the policy for you at the new rates, and they will add it to your mortgage, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's just more of the same. They did reduce the maximum increase, which had been at 25% and 20%, depending on what category you fell into, now to a maximum increase of 18%. So even if you're in one of those situations where they're going to increase your rate, the maximum is going to be 18%. But it is 18% per year, so that compounds.
Yeah.
And you get the surcharges. The grandfathering for new mapped goes away. That really doesn't have a big impact to us, because our entire city was already in a special flood hazard. But there, some of the surrounding communities, they had areas that were not in a special flood hazard zone. And with the new mapping that's coming out, they were now going to be in it, and they would automatically go to the actuarial rate. This does away with that. It allows them to come back in the first year as the preferred rate policy, and then they would be just like residents here who had a continuous policy. They would be ramped up over time, much slower than in the original Biggert Waters Act. I saved this slide. We do work with people on mitigation and in construction, and of course encouraged to elevate. The numbers here are 2012 rates, and it's kind of interesting to see that a house that's 4 feet below the base flood elevation would have a $9,500 a year flood insurance policy premium, whereas the same one that's built exactly at the base flood elevation is $1,410. And if you were to go 3 feet above the base flood elevation, it drops to $427 a year. As floodplain administrator, I often work with people and tell them when they're doing new construction, go up 3 feet, because the additional construction cost will be paid back quickly. What's more is with remapping, we have a number of homes that were only required to elevate about 4 feet, particularly in our flood surge zone. When they had to come up 4 feet, they discovered that if the house is going to be this high off the ground, they might as well go to 9 feet so they can walk under it and have a patio or do something. We didn't require them to go to 9 feet, but they've done that. And when they did, what happened with the remapping is when the base flood elevation increased, they still were more than 3 feet over it. And so they protected themselves not only with the old map, but into the new map. And that's a very positive thing. And that's what I wanted to share with you this evening.
Is that on the website? Because my potential buyers have that last little slide right there.
Are there any questions from council at this time on item 8.3? there any discussion from citizens on item 8.3? If there are none appearing, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Nancy, you had made mention that you wanted to address this item.
Yes, I was playing phone tag for 2 weeks with TML, and there were a couple of questions that I had for them about ordinance 2014-158 that I have still not received an answer to. That being said, if there's no objection by members of council, I would like for that to appear on the April the 28th city council meeting.
No objection being voiced, we'll move that to the next, to the May 27th agenda. And David, if that item is moved, do we need to then adjourn with a motion and vote?
If you've disposed of all of the business you didn't vote on yet, so you should vote to adjourn.
That's what I think. Thank you very much. With that being said, I will entertain a motion to adjourn this time.
I'll make a motion.
Thank you, Rick. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? With none appearing, we are adjourned at 8:03.